It is 7:30, time once again for Community Forum, and we are very lucky to have with us live in the studios this morning, Loren Murray and Dennis Kine. Loren is an independent scientist who works on radiation and public health issues. She worked at the Lawrence Berkeley National Lab for 5 years and 2 years at the Livermore Nuclear Weapons Lab. She's president of Scientists for Indigenous People and also currently works with the Radiation and Public Health Project, which you can check out at radiation.org, which is a group of independent scientists who have written 10 books on low-level radiation and public health. Dennis is a military veteran who has served for 15 years in the U.S. Army and over a year on the front lines of the first Gulf War as a battlefield medic. And he has seen firsthand the effects of depleted uranium weapons, and that's what we're going to be talking about this morning, depleted uranium weapons. Loren and Dennis, thank you for coming in this morning.
Thank you.
Yeah, it's wonderful to be in Seattle with you, Mike.
Let's start out, and maybe you can begin by telling our listeners what exactly is depleted uranium.
Depleted uranium basically is the radioactive trash from the nuclear weapons and the nuclear power plant projects. And there were nearly 1 million tons at Department of Energy facilities, and it began in the 60s. The Navy developed the first prototype depleted uranium weapon system. Since then, there have been, we got the patents from the U.S. Patent Office, which seemed to begin at the end of the 1960s on the development of bombs, missiles, and bullets. And these have been used in very large amounts, I mean large amounts, in Iraq twice, in Yugoslavia, and in Afghanistan. And basically those countries have been carpet bombed and grid bombed with depleted uranium bombs, and of course missiles were used too. And these countries are radioactive now forever. They've been bombed into radioactive rubble.
And in addition to those weapons that were used in those conflicts, is this stuff being used elsewhere as well?
Well, the U.S. has sold it to, we're not really sure how many countries, between 12 and 17 or 18. Because of the pressure at the United Nations and around the world of people opposed to it, very serious people opposed to it, it has prevented the sales, further sales to other countries. By this time, a weapon system that is this effective should have been sold to 100 or 80 or 120 countries. They're afraid to buy them, and the ones who have them are afraid to use them. So Britain, the United States, and Israel are the only countries that we know of that have used depleted uranium weapons.
And I think the important note, and you know, not that it's ironic or anything, that the scientist is talking about the weapons, I'd like to at least make sure that while they're busy talking us into putting it in the weapons system, and we're busy talking about how horrific it is to the gene pool and it aberrates the chromosomes, they're talking the civilian sector into applying it in civilian applications. For example, it's been used in the counterballast of aircraft since 1989, 850 pounds of it. So 850 pounds of depleted uranium is being used in the back end of an aircraft because you can get more weight and less space. That's the idea here. They're also using it in commercial yachts, and now there's patents going all over the place to put it in things like silverware. So the idea is that they might not be able to dispose of it anymore in the weapons system because people are catching on, and now they're talking the civilians into using it in their things. And it's becoming somewhat of a... they're at the pinnacle of ignorance to talk us into believing that something that every human being learns in the eighth grade is radioactive and actually falls into a state of decay the minute you liberate it from the ground. And they're going to go ahead and put that right next to me as I fly around the country.
Well, they're putting it in building blocks for buildings now and golf clubs. And this is a disaster. It'll end up in landfills. It'll make sick buildings. They already had to tear down buildings in Taiwan that were made with depleted uranium bricks. And it's just total insanity. It's complete irresponsibility in passing the waste and the responsibility onto the civilian sector.
Right. I mean, the rates of breast cancer we're seeing in Brookhaven, New York, the rates of breast cancer we're seeing in Hunters Point, Marin County, in San Francisco, and I imagine the cancer clusters we're seeing here, they've already, I mean, every scientist that, you know, has any merit or weight is saying that this is man-made intervention. This isn't, you know, Darwin's natural selection here that is causing all this. I mean, we have gone to a point where we are irradiating everything, all the way down to our meat, so that we can feed school kids, you know, their lunch program with a radiated hamburger. We're using it for everything now. We're scientifically explaining it away as it's okay. And they like to use this term that, you know, what's happening, it actually comes in a little bit less than background radiation. That's a continuous term, and that is, like, I'm embarrassed for the stupidity of Americans to articulate and pontificate like that, because it isn't coming in below background radiation. It's coming in addition to background radiation. So what you have is a double dose. You have background radiation and DU. It doesn't come in underneath and we don't notice it. It comes in on top, and it's in addition to. So we have background radiation, and we know that can cause damage, and then we have some more radiation on top of it. So the explanation of explaining it away to, well, it's lower than background radiation, literally is the pinnacle of ignorance.
It's Pentagon spin, and let's just look at the statistics on what's happened to Gulf War veterans. To Gulf-era veterans since 1991 until now, Terry Jemison at the Department of Veterans Affairs announced in August that we now have 518,739 Gulf-era veterans on medical disability. That is a government statistic and a government source. In that same 14-year period, there were only 7,035 reported wounded on the battlefield. How do we have 7,000 wounded in 14 years and 500,000 on medical disability? And Dennis has other statistics for us.
Well, and I think it's the big statistic, if you take a look at Jameson's work out of the Veterans Administration, is that he talks specifically about a 14-year period. And the 14-year period is the definition of the Gulf War. It's not Gulf War I and Gulf War II. Even the Department of Defense and the Veterans Administration writes in all their documents that the Gulf War started on August 2nd, 1990, and will end on a date to be determined by Congress. So there's an open window right now. We're in the same war we started on August 2nd, 1990. So these statistics are reflective of a 14-year battle. Operation Desert Fox, Operation Northern Watch, Operation Southern Watch, Operation Desert Shield, Desert Storm, Iraqi Enduring Freedom. They just keep adding operations into the same war. And so what we're doing is we're just stacking up statistics for the Gulf War right now. And we know that 11,000 soldiers, and even now they're coming out and they're claiming 13,000, are dead from Operation Desert Storm. And most of these soldiers, the 11,000 statistic was reflective of 91 to 95. So that's in addition to, you know, we're experiencing all these deaths. We're experiencing 500,000 disabled veterans who, like myself, get compensated for what's called undiagnosed illnesses. I was tested for ionizing radiation 2 times by Dr. Georgiev at the Palo Alto Veterans Administration. I was never given the results, and now I'm compensated for undiagnosed illnesses. I have a 20% disability. So basically, they just wordsmith us and dupe us. They abuse us while we're in the military by exposing us to DU, and then they abuse us in the VA by not admitting that it's happening. And currently, you take a look at the Fort Lewis Ranger, which I was reading the other day, and it looks like a few people got a Purple Heart down there, and 4 guys were on the front page, and it says that the VA is now going to cohabitate with the DO and fix soldiers. Like, the VA is now attending to active duty component soldiers versus the disabled veterans. They're shifting the whole paradigm on us right in front of our face.
And that's not all they're doing. They are rehabilitating soldiers who are amputees and severely injured. They're retraining them in Washington, D.C. and deploying them back to the Gulf area. They're putting them back in battle with artificial limbs and this is really horrible. The young women are coming back with terrible cases of endometriosis from the depleted uranium exposure, and the Army won't even diagnose them. They send them back to the battlefield bleeding. Sometimes the mothers have had to have their daughters pay for their daughters' hysterectomies before they were sent back to the battlefield. And that's not even talking about the birth defects. The post-Gulf War I babies in one study done by the VA in a group of 251 veterans in Mississippi, They had normal babies before they went to the Gulf War, and in the babies born after the Gulf War, the VA determined 67% of the newborns had severe birth defects. They were born without eyes, with brains missing, with organs missing, with limbs missing, or with terrible blood diseases. This is a nuclear disaster.
Right. It is. It's a nuclear disaster, and we have congressional testimony where Leonard Dietz and stood before Congress with Asaf Durakovich, a former nuclear medical doctor who was our colonel at the Department of Defense in 1991. And in 1997, there are stories of U.S. Army soldiers who stood there looking like AIDS or cancer victims with their wife right behind them who also looked like an AIDS or cancer victim, because we know that in combat, all the soldiers are promised the trophies, the soldiers are promised that they can go in and rape and pillage and kill and do anything they want to and bring it home with them if they want to. So they'll load up a Kalashnikov or an AK-47, stuff it in the back of their helicopter, not fly home with it on the TWA airplane, but meet up with it when it gets home, take it into their house, liberate depleted uranium dust particles, affect their wife, kill their baby. There are all kinds of accounts of infants dying after Desert Storm because their parents brought home war trophies. And so we know what this is doing. In addition to the birth defects, I mean, there's just countless miscarriages, countless deformities, and just an atrocious amount of just physical damage and pain, whether it be joint pain or neurosis, your synapses are affected. So all this is happening, and what they're telling us is drive on, soldier. Drive on, Airborne. Drive on, Ranger. Go ahead. You know, on Fort Lewis, they're killing themselves. They're sick, and they're being sent back to the battlefield without any treatment for their PTSD. They're being sent back on the battlefield physically already trashed from the vaccines. And so what they're doing now is they're just continuing to repeat the damage. And so they're sending soldiers into a state of shock, basically. Not post-traumatic stress disorder. I'm talking about shell shock. I'm talking about soldier's heart. I'm talking about the thousand-yard stare. So when you do repeated battlefield experiences day in and day out, it's not just post-traumatic stress disorder. One day it was bad for you. It's repeated trauma on the psyche and the spirit. These soldiers are coming home. We have the highest rates of suicide ever. We have incredible amounts of homicide, suicide, teeter-tottering going on. In Fort Bragg, four airborne soldiers came back from Afghanistan. One of them butchered his wife up and buried her out on the airfield, the drop zone. I mean, they're losing their minds. And people are walking around America talking about support the troops.
Yeah, and these nano-sized particles of depleted uranium, it's actually a radioactive poison gas weapon which releases huge numbers of very, very tiny particles, smaller than viruses or bacteria. They go right through the skin. The skin suntan lotion facilitates these particles going through the skin, getting into the blood, traveling all over the body. They go through the nose and the olfactory bulb straight into the brain. The University of Texas is doing extensive studies now on brain damage in Gulf War veterans. And these suicides, the murders, murdering their wives, this is just horrendous. This is unprecedented. There wasn't even anything like this after Vietnam. This is when half your soldiers are sick on medical disability, and they're cycling them out of the military. As soon as they bring them back, they bury them in their little communities where they're economically drafted to begin with. There's a disproportionate representation of American Indians and Hispanics. In fact, Spanish is the second language in Iraq now, and these soldiers aren't even American citizens. They're being picked up at the border and said, you've got a choice. You've got a choice of prison or going into the military.
Oh, and that's not new. I mean, in San Jose, California, where I come from, the Filipinos were the security component of the airport, basically, in Oakland, San Francisco, and San Jose. And they all got fired after 9/11 and were invited to go see the recruiter. So that's not, I mean, that is a continuous theme that we're always going to take the Ender class and go send them off to the battlefield. But specifically on this particulate matter, these dust particles that cook off to become smaller than bacteria or viruses, you know, Marion Falk, a Manhattan Project scientist who's out at Lawrence Livermore and a wonderful friend who Loren Murray introduced me to, he talks about the particulate matter being able to pass through the membrane, right? The cellular membrane, where the cellular membrane usually kicks everything back and protects the cell because the particulate matter is so small, it'll pass through, it'll hit to your cellular level. So these particulate effect, we look at rocky flats where they have cesium-137, strontium-90, tritium in the water, same thing in Hanford. We know that's happening. When you drink that water, the particulate matter gets in there and it has the potential to pass through the placenta, pass through the membranes, and affect the cellular and aberrate the chromosomes. We're dealing with a complete mess.
Yeah, it's the problem is that in a normal cubic meter of air, there are 1 billion particles, a tenth of a micron in diameter. This is the average diameter for depleted uranium radioactive gas and dust. And in a day, a man inhales 28 cubic meters of air. That's billions and billions and billions of particles. When you have that air loaded with depleted uranium dust, you're just slowly killing these people. And the civilians in the contaminated areas can't get away from it. They have much higher levels than our soldiers who serve for a while and leave. So in the civilian areas, you could very definitely say, and Marianne Falk has pointed out and said, be sure you say this every time you talk about DU, depleted uranium is a biological weapon. It is deliberately being used in regions where we want to control the mineral resources. And what we're doing is destroying the health, the genetic future, and the ability of these populations to resist American imperialism.
Right, and that's a very important point, because these clowns are hurling this stuff all over the world without recognizing the implications of its coming home. The soldiers bring it home. Our vehicles bring it home. I happen to have a brother-in-law who was a little bit more farther forward during Operation Desert Storm than I was. He was a sergeant first class. And what he did was he captured Iraqi weapons and brought them back to the rear so the French and the Germans could study them and sold them to them like that. But he now looks like an AIDS patient or a cancer victim himself. And he's, you know, my sister has had an ectopic pregnancy. In particular, in my early 20s, had a miscarriage with the woman I was with. And my stepbrother, who was a security patrol officer with the Air Force during Desert Storm, sat back in Dahran, never saw the battlefield. But what his job was to do was to look into the vehicles as they came onto the airfield to make sure they weren't loaded with bombs. So he would crawl underneath the vehicles and clank underneath the wheels, and all the dust particles would fall on his face. So he's sick, and his children are just almost not deathly ill, but they have illnesses that no young child in living in Redding, California, where it isn't that contaminated, should have. So when we sit down at Thanksgiving and Christmas, this is what we talk about: three members of my family all receiving compensation from the Veterans Administration for depleted uranium exposure.
Yeah, but you can't live on $200 a month.
I'm having trouble, right?
Yeah, and they have no medical care. Something like 217 soldiers have been tested since 1991 by the Pentagon for depleted uranium. Not even 300 soldiers. And we have 500,000 on medical disability. And when they get out, if they're sick, if they have deformed babies, they cannot get medical care. And in some families, the whole families are dying together. The soldiers bring it home in their semen. They internally contaminate their wives and partners. And it's just really a disaster.
And if that isn't horrifying enough, then, as you had pointed out earlier, they're also looking at integrating this stuff into regular everyday utensils, things like that, as well as transporting it. Obviously, they got to transport it back and forth for both the weapons and otherwise.
Yeah.
And I know they're, like, using it. The Navy tests their guns off the Washington coast. We have documents of that are using depleted uranium, so they're firing it into fishing areas.
Mm-hmm. That's right. And the other thing about DU is that it's not just over there, it's over here now, because the atmospheric dusts, which are carried around the world by the convection in the atmosphere and the winds and the jet stream, that DU dust is completely globally mixed throughout our entire atmosphere in 1 year. And we know this from studying volcanoes and volcanic eruptions and ash and where it's found a year later. It's global. So they found the smog of war from Kuwait and Iraq. It hung like a pall over those countries for a year after the first Gulf War. and they found it deposited in the Andes, in Hawaii, in the Alps, in the Himalayas, in Greenland, and in Antarctica. So we're breathing it now, too.
That cloud you're talking about is an important thing for, I mean, our viewers on a television set are looking at these clouds every day. That's what shock and awe is, right? So over Basra, you know, CNN is reporting at the front end of the conflict when we were really bombing a lot before, you know, we were softening them up before the invasion. In Basra, there was a cloud sitting over Basra, a real dark black cloud. And Andrews is sitting on the CNN box going, wow, that cloud's been over Basra for 6 days. We're not quite sure what that is, but interesting. And it's like, ever since I was a kid, that's called the mushroom cloud. It's not been called anything else but the mushroom cloud. The mushroom cloud is reflective of cooking and burning metal. That's what that is. It's cooking metal that is sitting there and can't really be blown around because of a number of things. You know, for example, its weight. So maybe for an explanation for people who don't quite grab what's happening here, lead is outlawed. It's outlawed for a number of reasons. One of the things you don't want to do is take a heat gun to your house and melt off lead paint and breathe it in. You don't want to do that. It makes you sick and can kill you. So if that's happening to uranium, which comes in at 238, and lead is at 216, and you're melting it and it's cooking off and it's oxidizing much like lead would at your house when you put the heat gun on it, you're breathing it in and you're altering your chromosomes.
You're altering all chromosomes of all living things. It's affecting all life on Earth now and changing it permanently forever. But let's talk about, actually, if people want to read more about depleted uranium, the best starter kit, I would say, is a book called Discounted Casualties, which is on the internet, and it's by a Japanese journalist. He's just, he did a wonderful job on these stories and interviews, and he actually won a very famous journalism award in Japan for this series. So I think we should tell the readers now what kinds of things are happening to counteract this horrible illegal use under all international laws, U.S. federal code, and military code of these illegal weapons. They are weapons of mass destruction. And maybe, Dennis, you could tell them about the Hamburg conference.
October of 2003, I encourage everybody to have a look at Trap Rock Peace. Sonny Miller and Charles Jenks out in Deerfield, Massachusetts, put together the whole conclusions and findings of the conference. So you can download them visually, or you can listen to us speak audibly and video-wise. And Loren's there, I'm there, Major Doug Rocky's there on the veterans and the civilians panel. But you also hear from just really renowned international scientists like Dr. Chris Busby, Horace Gunter, and they're talking about the implications from all over the globe, not just here at home with the soldiers, not just in Iraq, but what's happening in all the way in the UK and Ireland and what radiation is doing to the Earth right now.
And the talks are archived, so you can listen to them.
Right. That's what I mean. When you go to Trap Rock, you can go there and actually read them, see them, and hear them. Take your pick. It's all there. It's all free. And what we're asking is for you to do that, and then go ahead and send it out to all your friends, because it's conclusive. You know, Dateline interview of 1994 has Stone Phillips and Gene Pauley interviewing Cal Waller, who used to be the commander at Fort Lewis, right? Cal Waller is on the video with Stone Phillips saying, "This depleted uranium affected my soldiers. I'm really," and you could see it in his face. He's hurt. The guy cared about the troops. He's dead now at 58. Died of a massive coronary out in D.C. Who knows what happened, but healthy four-star generals don't usually die in their 50s. But he's dead, and the guys are still sick. And Cal Waller's a hero down at Fort Lewis. So the idea here is that we'd like you to disseminate information as much as you can. And that's the way we're going to probably get this to an informed public.
The next conference on uranium weapons is going to be held in the European Parliament. And that will be June 23rd to the 26th in just a couple of months. The European Parliament is so concerned about the use of depleted uranium weapons that they are holding this conference. They want to abolish uranium weapons in all NATO countries. And in the United States, the Connecticut legislature has just introduced a uranium weapons bill, which mandates, it requires the state to independently test soldiers who have served in Afghanistan and Iraq. And that will certainly help the effort to stop uranium weapons use. Once we start collecting independent data, it has a very powerful effect on the continued use of uranium weapons, because suddenly they're accountable. And this was proved in February of 2004 when a British soldier from Scotland, Kenny Duncan, won the very first depleted uranium lawsuit. And it's because he was part of an independent study which German doctors and scientists did on 14 soldiers. And the judge finally said on his appeal, I am convinced that depleted uranium caused your illness and the birth defects in your two children. And I think that we want to thank you from the bottom of our heart, Mike, for asking us each time we come to Seattle to come in and do an interview. We're very, very appreciative of any media who will touch this topic. And, of course, there's a total cover-up in the United States. So each time that you allow us to speak out, you are saving lives. Thank you.
Yeah, and I'd always, when I come this way, I always like to make sure everybody knows how much affection I have for Mr. McDermott.
Congressman McDermott.
He's a wonderful human being, and he's standing at the front lines for the troops and humanity, all of humanity. And
that's
in addition
right.
to that, I want to make sure that everybody knows you have wonderful Veterans for Peace chapters up here, both in Seattle and Olympia. Both of them are dedicated and pretty much specifically address Rachel Corrie in that situation, which I believe is wonderful. And Veterans for Peace doesn't require you to be a veteran to be a member. So if anybody's interested in supporting this mission, you can become a Veteran for Peace. Just become an associate member.
And we just want to thank the people of Seattle and Port Townsend and the state of Washington. This is always a really wonderful, spiritually uplifting and energizing visit every time we come. They're very generous. They're very interested in the topic, and they understand how serious it is.
All right. Just 2 minutes left. Final thoughts you'd like to share with our listeners?
Yeah, if anybody's got any time on their hands to go and circulate around the Fort Lewis, Tacoma area, they need you. They need a continuous address of this issue. We were there speaking two times yesterday, and we had a very limited audience. And they need to be informed. These troops need to get some access to them. And the easiest way is around their facilities where they sit and eat and have a drink. And if we get to three of them, it changes the whole dynamics on the installation.
Right.
They're like little birds. They just chirp all over the place,
right.
And we have to get to them.
Yesterday we were sitting at a restaurant, and I was watching two young families, military families, with their young children, 3 or 4 years old, and they all looked happy and healthy, and it was very sad for me, because I know as soon as those fathers are deployed, they'll come back, and those families will be wrecked. They'll be ruined. And we have to remember the words of Henry Kissinger after Vietnam. The Agent Orange, the chemical war for oil. Well, this is the nuclear war for oil. And Kissinger said, military men are just dumb, stupid animals to be used as pawns in foreign policy. And we have to remember how our military is being used as throwaway soldiers.
Well said. Very well said.
All right. Well, I want to thank you both for coming in today.
Thank you.
Thank you,
Seattle, and Mike McCormick. Wonderful
yes.
to be here.
Thank you, Mike.
We have just been talking with Loren Murray and Dennis Kine. Dennis is a Gulf War veteran, spent 15 years in the U.S. Army, and Loren has worked at both Lawrence and Livermore Labs on nuclear-related issues.